if Charlotte, if we're going to be a new South City, I think one of a sign of the times responsibilities is to challenge them. Challenge you on it. Maybe music is our niche, but we're going to challenge you on who you say you are, even when it becomes uncomfortable, because you can't get to good stuff unless you deal with uncomfortable. So we're going to challenge you to do that and get through to the other side, musically, conversationally, educationally, and through what we call edutainment. We'll entertain you. We'll make you smile and make you groove. But you're going to leave with some information. You might feel comfortable and you might not.
You might not.
I'm Joni Deutsch, and from WFAE in Charlotte, this is Amplifier, the music podcast where we shine a light on the Charlotte music scene. Because Charlotte is more than just a banking city or a football city. So each weekday during the month of September, we're going to explore the people, places, and things that help define the Queen City's crown sound. And today, a music collective sparking conversations by unearthing history, one song at a time. That's coming up on Amplifier.
Amplifier. And then the beat will drop.
Amplifier.
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 Can you introduce yourselves and what you do?
Well, I'm Toni Tuppence. I am the program director for A Sign of the Times of the Carolinas, and I'm also the lead vocalist for the A Sign of the Times band.
And I am Tyrone Jefferson. I'm the founder and executive director for A Sign of the Times of the Carolinas. I am the arranger and the composer for 99% of all the music, and I try to play a little trombone.
Can you give us an explainer of what A Sign of the Times is?
Well, if you're speaking of our nonprofit, which is A Sign of the Times of the Carolinas, then we are missioned to share the legacy of the African diaspora through music, through dance, and through spoken word. When or if you're talking about the A Sign of the Times band, then all of our music ensembles share the stories of people of color through all of the music that we play and all of the genres. So whether it's straight ahead jazz or classic R&B or Latin music or every once in a while a little bit of gospel, we are telling the stories of our people, and we like to say we're partying with a purpose.
I love that, partying with a purpose. So Tyrone, I read that you were the one that started the band in what, was it 1999?
Yes.
Can you tell us how the band, I should say, just to clarify for myself, mm-hmm. It was the band that was formed. It wasn't the nonprofit that was formed. Okay,
came
wonderful.
Later, right.
So, Tyrone, you started the band, Sign of the Times, in 1999.
Yes. And
can you tell us the circumstances around the creation of it?
Like sure.
How it came about?
Sure. I was on the road with James Brown at the time, and I wanted to come home and put a group of musicians together that would play my compositions. I have a degree from a music school, which will remain nameless. But
no, it won't.
So in Boston, I was able to do a lot of getting musicians together just to play original compositions. And I wanted to continue that in Charlotte. So when I was off from Mr. Brown's band, I called Gerard Benson, a longtime friend, bass player, and said, hey, man, I want to put together all black big band to play our music. Can you hook me up? And it took a couple of days. Michael Porter was a part of that as well. And we started playing my charts. We met at the old Afro-American Cultural Center downtown. And we stayed there for, 7 or 8 years, every Monday, playing my charts. Mostly arrangements, but some originals. And everything, like Toni said, told a story about the history you never learned in school. But we also did Stevie Wonder, Michael Jackson, and I got a few originals in there. So that's a long answer to your short question.
And it's going to get longer because I know that some listeners out there, they just heard in a very nonchalant way from you that you performed or were playing with James Brown. And that was kind of a very small drop in the bucket of a bigger story.
It is, you see, but I got fired a lot. So if you were to Google me, I started with him in 1979. The story was very interesting. I was in the military, did most of my time in Germany, came back to Fort Gordon where I did my advanced training, and I started playing jazz in the city of Augusta, Georgia. A lot of the guys who like jazz, who are with Mr. Brown, frequented the same joint, a joint called Damien's, by the way. It's no longer there. So I'm asleep. 3 a.m. the phone rings. Back, this is before you had, you know, call waiting and stuff. If the phone rings at 3 a.m., you think something's wrong. You know, like your mama died or your child died. So we kind of ignored it, but if it rung again, we picked up. Johnny Griggs, the percussionist, said, "Tyrone, Mr. Brown got a gig in Canada. If you want the gig, come down to Tamish Lewis now and we'll leave." I said, "Hey, man, you joking, right?" So I hung up, went back to sleep. He called back 30 minutes later, "Bruh, this big time. If you want to be with James Brown, get your blank down here now." So my wife at the time, we packed a bag, went to Tamish Lewis, and it was the best start of a great, great career. We did one gig en route to Canada in Rock Hill, South Carolina, an outdoor concert. Mr. Brown heard me warming up and told Sweet Charles, who was the musical director at the time, offer him $300 a week. And that was the beginning of my on and off being with him from 1979 until he died in 2006.
This is a man's world. But it would be nothing, nothing, nothing without a woman, girl. Can you play a little bit right now? Wait a minute. Wait a minute. That's Tyrone Jefferson. Give him a big round of applause. Man made the cars. Tickets over the road.
I hardly ever did a whole year with him because we had a special a relationship. She met him once. We went to his wedding for the third wife.
Met him a few times.
Yeah. So it was a very, very, very good relationship. Just kind of had a lot of ups and downs. And I wasn't one of his sycophants who just said, "Yes, Mr. Brown, yes, Mr. Brown." I would sometimes say, "You must be out your mind."
And then?
And then I'd be coming home. But then he called me back. And I'll tell you this last story in case we don't talk about him again. We went to some gig in New York, and I brought her with me on the gig. Because I really didn't need the money. We were just shopping and stuff like that at the Apollo. I'm still the musical director. So the show was great. At the end, the paymaster, y'all supposed to make $3,000. I went from $600 a week, or $300, whatever it was, to $3,000 a week. So when I was getting ready to get my money, it was half.
Which we had spent in advance, by the way, because we shopped and had a good time.
Yeah, because we were going to use that just to have a good time in New York. And I said, I can't tell you what I said, but I said, "Mr. Bobby, what is this?" He said, "The boss told me to cut your pay 50%. "Okay, no problem." So we took the money, and I said, "It'd be a cold day in hell before I work with him again." Now, that was in he died in 2006. That was in 2003. Every time the office called, I'd say, "No, I'm not coming." "Mr. Brown said you really need it." "I don't care." "No." So 2003, fast forward to 2006, it was August. Mr. Bobbitt called. "Mr. Brown's getting ready to do this album, Tyrone. 1968, Soul on Top. He only wants you." Los Angeles, the big theater out there, Christian McBride with his big band and you with the JBs. "He'll pay you anything you want." I said, "Wait a minute. Anything I want?" "Yeah." He said, "Give me a number." I gave him an outrageous number. He said, "Let me call you back." 15 minutes later, Mr. Brown said, "He'll pay it." "Okay, cool." But you know what, Joni, I'm glad I did it, because in December he was dead, and I cried like a baby. That's my James Brown story.
You might have been the only person to say no to James Brown. Not just once, but multiple times.
No, there's some others. Some of the ones that came before me, like Maceo Parker and Fred Wesley and Pee Wee Ellis and Chow Cherrill. You know, he has a way of messing with people just to see if he can mess with you. And some of the older ones, they just didn't take it. So, no, I was the last group. I was the group that he had all the hits with in the 60s and 70s. They left. And then, like I said, I joined in 79, and I was in that last batch of musicians that came in 75. So right now, I won't bore you with James Brown trivia, but we have this sort of this stratification of, well, I'm one of the original JBs. Oh, I'm one of the, what do you call the other band?
Soul Generals.
Soul Generals. You know, I said, get over that. Think about it being the University of James Brown. We're all part of this spectrum from when he started in 1959. By the way, the MC, Danny Ray, he's 80-something years old, clear as a bell. He goes out now for short trips because he just prefers to go on the short trips. But we are a continuum. I said, think about it. There are less than 100 of us in the world. So we should celebrate that and don't get hung up on the name that he called you.
Wow. So you just gave a really great personal history to James Brown. And of course, that only scratched the surface of Mr. James Brown. But some of what you just explained, that kind of backstory, is what you do with A Sign of the Times.
Exactly.
So I want to kind of dig into that, like what the purpose of it is and what you have been able to do with A Sign of the Times, the nonprofit, as well as Sign of the Times, the band.
Well, I can tell you the impetus for starting the band, again, was just to play my original compositions, but more importantly, to share the history when appropriate. Because, you know, if you're on the dance floor at the club, you may not want to hear about Nzinga Umbeba Mamadou Dion and all his great accomplishments in the Nubian Empire. You just want to get your groove on. So I said, okay, so we have to be able to do that. A real quick story. So I went to an all-black university. I took a class, his history class, and the guy said something like, Christopher Columbus did not discover America. I said, wait a minute. Yes, he did. 1492, you don't need them. He said, no, black folks did what? So I put myself on a lifelong quest to learn as much about my history that could be proven. I didn't want to go to the internet and say, yeah, Pookie said that black folks, that Tarzan really was black. Come on now. I know you're lying. So I went on this quest just to, I shouldn't say read, because I have read books, but I bought every book that was from a reputable source on black history. And I said, if I could put that through music, that's the deal. And that's the long answer about the impetus for Sight of the Times, to share the history that you didn't learn in school. And it's for everybody, not just for black people.
Yeah, Tony, I want to hear your side of that too. I mean, what are your thoughts on sharing that history?
Absolutely, absolutely. I grew up in Virginia. So when I was 5 years old, I found out by chance that I was going to desegregate the parochial school in my hometown. Very small town, so it's not like this was some huge community. But I didn't even know I was Catholic until again, small community. My father was Baptist, my mother was Catholic, so I spent most of my time in the Baptist church around the corner with all my friends and my cousins. And I had planned out my year. My best friend and I had planned out our year for 5 years old. And mine was interrupted when I found out I had to desegregate this school because I could read and I could do a lot of stuff. So that was my entree, really, into really understanding what a segregated world was and what that meant. And I told Tyrone the story that it really hit me when I was about 7 and someone wanted to bring a Girl Scout troop to the school. And the only stipulation was that I could not join. And so I told Tyrone, when I write my memoir, it's going to be Too Black to Be a Brownie. I already know the title, and I have a few of the stories in line. But one of the things that was central to our community was the music. So all of my life, you know, when I was in that other world, I was a little out of step musically and rhythmically, because even when I didn't know it, I had that back rhythm in my musical spirit. I didn't think much about singing or performing because everybody in my family sang. So the fact that I could sing a little bit meant absolutely nothing, you know, in my family. So that was my entree into both things. And the thing that held me together really through that period was the information that I got from my mother and my father. My father, quick story, my father told me, he taught with parables, through parables. And looking at Tarzan, Tyrone talked about Tarzan a minute. You know, that was every kid's favorite thing. It didn't matter that you were black, and it didn't matter necessarily that people who looked more like you were represented in ways that didn't make any sense because you didn't know it. And my father came in one day while I was watching Tarzan and asked me what I was looking at, and I told him. And in my 7-year-old self was like aggravated. He was, you know, interrupting me. And he asked me, he said, "Well, so who is that guy?" I said, "Well, that's Tarzan." And I'm thinking, "You idiot, don't you even know Tarzan?" And he said, "Well, who are those other people?" And I said, those are the natives, those are the Africans. He said, "So they're in Africa?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "So what's that?" And that's a monkey. And what's that? Giraffe. What's that? I said, "It's a tiger." He said, "Yeah, that's a tiger." He said, "So the tiger's in Africa?" I said, "Yeah." And he said, "The problem with this is, baby," he said, "that's a Bengal tiger." He said, "That's the biggest, baddest tiger there is. But it ain't in Africa." I was like, "Huh?" He said, "It ain't in Africa." He told me, he said, "You know, the Bengal tiger's from India, not Africa." He said, "So if the people who made this show, this story, don't even know the difference between a Bengal tiger and a lion or something that ought to be in this scene, and think that black people in Africa have bones in their noses and are running behind a white man who clearly wasn't from there, maybe you ought to think about what these folks are telling you." He said, "I just want you to think." And he walked out of the room. And it changed my life. That is my moment. That was my moment. And everything that I do now in terms of questioning, I can take right back to that moment. Because he just said, "Do your own research, but question everything, particularly what is related to you. Question everything." And so, you know, that's how I came up. And then relating that to A Sign of the Times, as we went out into the community before the nonprofit was formed, as we went out into the community partying with a purpose, Tyrone and I would come back and talk about what we saw in the community and what we didn't see and what the conversations were and what they were not. And not so much the physical health of the community, but what's the emotional and spiritual and cultural health of the community? Well, how can we impact that and not just entertain folks? And we realized that in order to do that and to get some of the financial support we would need for it, that we should look into forming a nonprofit. And that's my memory of how we made that decision to go that route, because we wanted to get to more people. We wanted to get to communities that couldn't afford the band, because the band had to pay for all the musicians and everybody that we, you know, took with us. And not everybody in this community or some others could afford to do that. So we wanted to find a way that we could offset some of that cost.
Solidarity, why is that such a mystery? It's about connection. Integration, segregation.
Coming up, a sign of the times on bridging that musical divide between Rosetta Tharpe and Elvis Presley, James Brown and Bruno Mars. That's coming up on Amplifier.
It's about connections. Preachers, how many up the block can relate the Bible to the daily life? It's about connections.
Hey, Amplifier friends. Time flies when you're discovering great music, right? Well, we've received a number of questions from listeners like you about the future of this podcast. Will Amplifier continue past September? And will we continue highlighting the Charlotte music scene as a podcast? To which I say, yes and yes. Right now, Amplifier is a daily podcast for September, and it will continue as a bi-weekly podcast starting in October, with new episodes every other week. We have so many musical roads left to explore in Charlotte, and we want you along for the ride. So do not miss a beat. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast on NPR One, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you find podcasts. You can find out where and how to subscribe to Amplifier on wfae.org/amplifier. And thank you for the support. As you're subscribing to the podcast in your favorite app, let's get back to our interview. I want to talk a little bit about the community part, what you just mentioned, Tony, about how you guys, you're going into the community, you're trying to see what's there and also what's missing.
Mm-hmm.
So start off, what was missing?
The connection to greatness, foundationally. And foundationally, I mean DNA. Because, you know, Charlotte is a community. I came here in 1998 to work with the city in neighborhood development. So I got the opportunity through that to really meet people throughout Charlotte very personally, and neighborhoods very personally. And so I saw the struggle that was starting to occur because everybody wanted to get to Charlotte. Charlotte sounded like some southern Mecca. But I realized quickly it was a Mecca if you came here with a skill set that was very, very saleable. And I looked around and I saw that, but the folks who lived here weren't necessarily feeling this sense of a Mecca. And so I was dealing with the folks who were still trying to figure out how they're going to find money for rent in a community that I could see was getting ready to gentrify, right? So tie that to a sign of the times. When you're going out and you're entertaining folks, then you're, you might be soothing some things that are going on, but you're not giving information that people can build on. And that's what I think we wanted to do. We wanted to give some historical context that would help reshape a foundation, and then through that reshaping realize, wait a minute, if I come from that, then now somebody help me understand how I move from where I am and or move through where I am to wherever it is I want to be. And we could do that with the music because the music will bring you together. Now you've got this captive audience. What are you going to do with them? Are you just going to entertain and give folks an opportunity to groove? Or are you going to give them entertainment like Fat Albert used to say, and if you're not careful, you're going to learn something? And so I think we took that opportunity and try to build on that. We continue to try to build on that.
When it comes to music history, when you look at, say, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame,
each year they have that induction ceremony, or they have their nominees that are up for the awards or to be inducted. And you look at the list, and you look at how many of them in the past have been the Elvis Presley types, the those that were really, they came about because of the work of the great guitarist and vocalist, the Odettas, and Rosetta Tharpe. Like, there's so many individuals. They're not there in the history books. No. They're only there in the hearts of the people that actually know that they should be there. And so I kind of want to dive into that when it comes to music. Because when you guys are going out there and you're sharing pieces of music that might not be the popular pieces that people know and love, but they inspired those pieces. Mm-hmm. What are you choosing? What histories are you bringing to the table so people know, oh my gosh, my favorite song was inspired by or built off of the legacy of this person?
Well, it depends on the gig. We'll do songs from West African artists because I try to cover the entire diaspora. So we have, for example, a Latin ensemble, a swing ensemble, R&B ensemble, a jazz ensemble. So it depends. But if we're just doing a regular gig where people want to dance, we seldom throw in a lot of history for dancing because, again, they just want to dance. But, you know.
Except sometimes we might start a gig, even if it's a party, if we get the opportunity, we might start a gig with a West African song. And then watch what happens when people get on the floor.
Right.
Because the movement is the same. So the dance is the same. You know, kids call it twerking now, but I can't remember what it was called in the African culture. But the movement is exactly the same.
So for the kids out there that are maybe coming up to your gigs or these concerts, and they're probably humming to like Bruno Mars or any of like the top 40 artists out there now.
What I have found interesting when young people come out, because we usually don't see a lot of young people unless we are operating. And when I say young people, I'm saying teenagers up to about 30, 35. We don't see a lot of them unless we're doing an outdoor festival where the music is going to attract them. But when we do a street festival or something, we're going to play, particularly when we want folks dancing in the street, we're going to play Bruno Mars. But before Bruno Mars, we might play James Brown. So, and they'll stay on the floor effortlessly. Or if we do Bruno Mars and then go into James Brown, and they stay on the floor because they recognize it's the same rhythm. So when they don't realize it, they're jamming and dancing to the old guy without missing a beat. And I think we teach something just in that transition.
Well, you know, with our kids, they know the evolution of the stuff, you know, like...
Oh, sure.
You know, Fonzo's like, oh, yeah, that came from Kool and the Gang, da-da-da-da-da, and he's just using that one little snippet. And so they sometimes they know. They know where it came from.
So there's a quote on a Sign of the Times website, and it's by Marcus Messiah Garvey. Mm-hmm. And the quote is, a people without the knowledge of their past history, origin, and culture is like a tree without roots.
Absolutely.
How are you all establishing those roots or maybe unearthing those roots that are there? They're just waiting to be unearthed in Charlotte.
The roots, like the roots of a tree, you know, are diverse. So pick any of those one roots. It could be Black history. It could be Black music, evolution of the world, religion, philosophy. I told some people, if everything has a predecessor event and you're studying geometry in school, where did Pythagoras go to school? You think he just thought up the Pythagorean theorem by himself? And they say, well, he probably did. Okay, well, you need to do your research. And that we start showing them the isosceles triangles in Egypt, you know, see, it's perfect. It's been there for thousands of years before Pythagoras. How do you know, little things like that. So I think if we're able to get people to understand that quote from Marcus Garvey, but they have to have the desire to do so, because we have a lot of trees without roots walking around.
Even in Charlotte, I mean, you have so many people coming to Charlotte that are so new here. I mean, what is it? The stat of like nearly 100 people move in mm-hmm. day after day to Charlotte.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And all these people are, one, like they have no clue about Charlotte's history. They might not even have a clue about broader history. That's a lot of history to teach them.
It is. It is. And I think you do it, unfortunately and fortunately, one conversation at a time. And Tyrone's right. We have put in place some programs that help us do some of that. Tyrone has a program that he started called Black History is
Invisible
to Most, Yet Invaluable to All. And he uses technology to share that information. Again, getting people to think. And then I started a program called Listen. And Listen,
our most popular one, by the way.
Listen is intended to be a dialogue between divergent factions. It could be old and young. It could be black and white. It can be black and Latino. Whatever it might be. It might be around a topic. But the only construct is that people will sit and listen to understand. Not change minds, not win or lose, but to understand. And it has become very popular because we're able to use music, usually live music, to hold the whole conversation together and to settle people a little bit. And then we start these conversations. And some of those conversations have been around or have been with people who are new to Charlotte and people who have been here for a long time, and how their view of Charlotte is different, and how they can both grow through that process. We had one conversation over on the west side one time where some young people were talking about how they struggled and struggle through where they live on the west side and the image of that, and that they want to leave because they don't feel like they have the support to move on. And one young woman shared an incident of racism and classism that she had met at a university. Turns out that one of the older people, who was like 78 or 79, was an alumnus of that university and heard what this kid was going through. And she took it on herself to say, well, you're not going through it by yourself. I'll be dealing with them tomorrow. No matter what your decision is about staying or going, they will hear from me, because that cannot happen. So suddenly you got teenagers or very, you know, 20-year-olds looking at a 78-year-old woman and realizing now that you're in solidarity because you listen to each other. And so that's the beauty of that program.
What do you want the legacy of A Sign of the Times to be?
That we made a difference. That's my one sentence summary.
Yeah. I'd love for more young people, when they're our age and we're gone, I'd love for somebody to be sitting somewhere, because they won't be sitting in a studio like this. I don't know what it'll look like.
Be sitting in like a jet in the middle of the sky.
Exactly. That's it. And if A Sign of the Times and Tyrone Jefferson or Tony Tuppence came into the conversation of something that was foundational for them and inspirational for them to move them forward, then I'd feel like it was worth it. So that's what we have to do. That's what we're about doing. And that's what gets my juices flowing, is those conversations with the young people that say, wow, Miss T, I hadn't thought about that. Or like this little, like this little kid said the other day when we were doing a training and I was training them how to interview older people to find heroes and sheroes in their community. So this little, I'm guessing he was six. He was watching everything I said throughout the training. And then as soon as it was time, I said, okay, who wants to try? His hand went up. He kept going up. Me, Misty, me. So I said, okay, you ready? He said, yeah. So I told him, we had somebody had to interview. Two questions in, he was like, this too hard, Miss T. I don't want to do this. This too hard. I said, no, you started. You got to finish. If you never do it again, you got to finish. I said, but it's not as easy as it sounds. No. And at the end, I said, can you do it? Yeah, I think I can do it. That's legacy for me. That's enough.
A Sign of the Times are very active in the Carolinas. You can find out where they're going to be next on asignofthetimes.org. Amplifier is a production of WFAE. This episode was written and produced by me, Joni Deutsch. Our associate producer is Cole Del Charco. Our editors are Greg Collard and Jadon Marshall. Our theme music is provided by Dirty Art Club. You can share your favorite Charlotte music recommendations right now on social media. Just follow and tag me. I'm at A Change of Tune. New episodes of Amplifier drop each weekday this September, so make sure to subscribe to the Amplifier podcast on Apple Podcasts, NPR One, and wherever you find podcasts. For more Charlotte music chats, including playlists and even a Charlotte music map, visit WFAE.org/amplifier. Until next time, I'm Joni Deutsch. Thanks for listening.